April 4th, 1791. I'm married. Dearest Journal, Captain Isaac Burton, my husband, how I will never tire of saying that, presented you to me as a wedding gift. He says a lady must have a place to keep her private thoughts. Happiness is mine. May 13th, 1791. Isaac called me Rachel. He was telling me about Mr. Faber's pig getting loose. He laughed and said, I tell you, Rachel, that pig was madder than a wet cat. We both froze. And then Isaac excused himself to go to the barn. I know he married me for company because he was lonely after Rachel's death. But it hurt just the same. August 7th, 1791. I have not been sleeping well. Though I have rearranged the sitting room and completed a new quilt for our bed, somehow this is still her house. Rachel's. When I voiced that to Isaac, he called me silly. August 17th, 1792. I went blueberry picking with the neighbor's children. We merrily tramped through the forest, singing and eating the ripe, juicy fruit. Suddenly, I shivered. The hair on my neck rose. Something was watching us from the shadows. Leaving the children behind, I went to see what it was. I followed the sounds into a dense thicket. But there was nothing there. I turned around to go back to the children. But all the trees looked the same. And suddenly, it was so cold. I ran, but tripped and fell. The next thing I remember is Tom, the eldest of the children, shaking me awake. I'd been missing for a while, so he had come looking for me. I felt dizzy. Odd. There was a little wound bleeding from my neck, from where I probably scratched it against a branch. Tom helped me walk out to where the others were gathered, picnicking in a meadow. We returned home in high spirits, fingers stained purple, with enough fruit to make jam. The warm sunlight did my cough much good. November 18th, 1792. Isaac grows grimmer each day. He hardly speaks to me. She casts a pall over our home. Mrs. Mayer brought me a tincture for my cough. She burned some herbs and blessed our house. She said in the old country her people were healers. They fought against the undead. Ours is a Christian household, and I do not believe in such blasphemy. December 19th, 1792. At night, my husband's dead wife comes and sits on my chest. I'm convinced of it. I wake up choking, blood on my lips, afraid to fall asleep again. I cannot eat. My mind finds no peace. How is she doing this? She's dead. Rachel, I beg you, let me go. Welcome to Haunted Places. I'm Greg Polson. Every other Thursday, I take you to the scariest, eeriest, most haunted, real places on Earth. This week, join me on a supernatural journey to the Bennington County Courthouse, built on top of a colonial graveyard in Manchester, Vermont. To this day, it's haunted. If you can't get enough haunted places, don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on your favorite podcast directory, as well as on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast, and on Twitter at Parcast Network. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. In southern Vermont, tucked into a valley near the Green Mountains, lies the picturesque small town of Manchester. It's a great place to go antiquing, or perhaps skiing in the winter. In the historic district of the town is the Bennington County Courthouse. Built in 1822, it is one of the oldest still-in-use courts in Vermont. The building is lovely, of classical revival design, painted a sunny yellow with dark green shutters. But buried beneath the courthouse are the remains of an old graveyard where dark secrets lie. One soul, buried in this graveyard long ago, haunts the Manchester courthouse to this day. In the early 1790s, the U.S. was a young country, not quite 20 years old. Vermont had recently become a state. The townsfolk of Manchester were a hardy lot, some born in the colonies, but some had immigrated from Europe. While most locals would call themselves God-fearing, a significant portion of the town weren't regular churchgoers. Folklore and superstitious beliefs were as common as prayers. Folk remedies brought over from the old world were more common than doctors. Captain Isaac Burton, a naval officer and a deacon of the Congregational Church, was a well-respected citizen of Manchester. He married lovely and vivacious Rachel Harris on March 8, 1789. Sadly, tragedy soon struck the young couple. Rachel had contracted consumption, and her health quickly declined. On February 1st, 1790, just shy of the Burtons' first wedding anniversary, Rachel passed away. After mourning Rachel, Captain Burton married Rachel's stepsister, the outgoing Hulda Powell, just over a year later on April 4th, 1791. Unfortunately, not long after they married, Hulda became ill and began to display symptoms of consumption. As Hulda's health declined, she tried many remedies, but to no avail. The couple's extended family became desperate, fearing Hulda would die. They came to a dire conclusion about Hulda's illness and embarked upon a grotesque solution to return Hulda to good health. The cold ground had little give. Isaac Burton stomped hard on the shovel, finally driving it into the earth. Phelps, the graveyard caretaker, dug along beside him. Rachel's father suddenly burst through the small crowd of townsfolk watching the men dig. His face was twisted with anger. "What you do here is blasphemy," he yelled. "'Tis sacrilege to disturb the dead." Two church deacons grabbed him and dragged him away. Long after he was out of sight, Isaac could still hear his father-in-law's yells, echoing in his ears. He felt bad, but he was desperate. He couldn't bear to lose Hulda like he had lost Rachel, and Hulda was getting sicker each day. If there was the slightest chance that Rachel was, that she could be... He didn't really believe it, but he had to try. Isaac looked at the grim faces in the townsfolk watching him dig. They believed it. Isaac hefted his shovel and tossed earth over his shoulder onto the growing pile. He was getting into a rhythm now. Stomp, push, lift, toss. Stomp, push, lift. Poor Rachel. She had been so sweet and kind, lovely, brave, even at the end, her eyes still bright in her too thin, pallid face. "Isaac! Isaac!" Isaac could almost hear her voice calling to him. "Isaac, let me be." The command was so loud that Isaac paused his digging and looked around. The crowd of townspeople had swelled, but none addressed him. An icy shiver slid down his spine. Was his mind playing tricks? Or was it a warning from Rachel from beyond the grave? It was tough work, but they were making progress. Soon, he would know the truth, and then he could go home to Hulda. His hands. Isaac came out of his reverie. His right hand felt odd, tingly. He looked down at where his hands gripped the shovel. A spider was crawling on his right hand. It was ugly, mottled gray-white, nearly translucent. Isaac hit at the spider. It eluded him and skittered up his sleeve. Isaac shook his arm and slapped the spider, squishing it. It fell to the ground, on top of a writhing heap of gray-white spiders. The spiders were rising up from a crack in the earth. They covered his shoes. They scrabbled and crawled up the shovel and his legs, a quivering, slithering mass threatening to swallow him whole. Lad? Isaac jumped as Phelps touched his shoulder. Do you need a rest? Isaac looked wildly about him. The spiders were gone, disappeared, as if they never existed. Isaac wiped his forehead. He didn't understand how, but Rachel was here. She had done that. Only she knew how much he loathed spiders.
Maybe we should stop.
Phelps looked at the crowd. There were at least 50 people gathered watching them dig. Someone had lit a bonfire and was handing out torches. The crowd whispered among themselves and stared at the widening gash in the earth, almost like they expected Rachel to suddenly rise from the depths. Hulda's life depends on this, Phelps whispered. Isaac leaned over and carefully picked up his shovel from where it had fallen on the ground. Well, let us continue then, he said grimly, as he stomped the shovel into the ground. The sooner we finish the task at hand, the better. Isaac continued to dig. Though the leaden clouds overhead promised snow, he was drenched in sweat. Isaac kept an eye out for spiders. He didn't see any. Was he going crazy? His mind was besieged by whispers from Rachel, begging him to stop, begging him not to do this, to let her rest in peace. The shovels finally hit wood. Phelps patted Isaac on the shoulder. Good lad, he said, trying to comfort Isaac. They scraped away the dirt from the top of the coffin. The coffin suddenly shifted, just a little. Or did it? The crowd gathered closer, holding their torches. Isaac stared at the coffin, his mouth dry. Did it really just move? Isaac heard a soft thumping noise, as if something in the coffin was trying to get out. But no one else seemed to notice. Phelps handed Isaac a crowbar. Isaac stared at the coffin, hesitating. Phelps motioned for him to continue. Stop, Isaac! Isaac leaned in close to pry the crowbar against the seam of the lid. A scaly, withered hand punched through the wood to grab Isaac and pull him down, down, down. Isaac screamed and dropped his shovel. It was another vision from Rachel. Isaac scrambled out of the ditch and addressed the crowd.
We must stop, he yelled. Rachel doesn't want to be disturbed.
The preacher stepped forward and pointed at Isaac. He does the bidding of the vampire. We must not falter. God will see us through. Some men grabbed Isaac, held him down and bound his hands. He was forced to sit ditchside as the grim exhumation continued.
See what you have done, Isaac. For this you will pay.
Isaac struggled against his bonds, yelling for them to stop. The mob paid him no mind. All the while, the ghost of Rachel whispered threats and curses in his ears. They continued to dig, chiseling icy chunks of earth from around the coffin. They hoisted the coffin from its pit. Isaac fell silent. He was hoarse from screaming. No one was paying him mind anyway. A preacher vigilantly stepped forward, praying, Bible in one hand, holy water in the other. The mob pressed in close around the coffin. The wood seemed to moan and hiss as the preacher sprinkled holy water on it. Someone handed Phelps a crowbar, and he began to pry at the wood, the nails making tiny shrieking noises as they gave way. An odd hush fell over the crowd.
I will haunt you till the end of time.
Though he wanted to, Isaac couldn't turn away. He had done this. He had given in to superstition. He had let them intrude on the peace of the dead. And in doing so, he called the spirit of Rachel back to the living world. Phelps lifted the bundle from the coffin and placed her on the ground. He ripped off the winding sheet tucked about her head and chest. It was still recognizably her. Withered, leathery skin stretched tautly over bones. Wisps of hair still clung to her skull. Shriveled hands clasped to her chest. For the first time in nearly 3 years, Isaac looked into the face of his wife, Rachel.
Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, let's continue the story.
In 1793, over 2 years after her passing, the corpse of Captain Burton's first wife, Rachel, was dug up to see if she was somehow flourishing beyond her death. The family of his second wife, Hulda, was convinced that Rachel was a vampire, feeding upon Hulda from beyond the grave, causing her to waste away. As Hulda grew deathly ill, her desperate loved ones decided to take matters into their own hands. It was thought that vampires worked through emotional or spiritual bonds to prey on the living and drain their life force. This bond between the living and dead could only be broken by a secondary killing of the vampire. So that's what the good people of Manchester did. Hulda stared into the looking glass and pinched her thin cheeks to bring color to them. Last night had been the worst. She hadn't slept at all. In fact, she'd hardly closed her eyes for fear that Rachel would come. Isaac entered the room and hovered behind Hulda. Are you ready? He asked. He looked haggard this morning, too. Dark circles around his eyes. Though it was expensive and not at all safe, he had insisted they keep candles burning the whole night long. He had just sprinkled holy water around their home. She didn't know what had happened at the graveyard. Isaac refused to tell her. But somehow, he had come to believe that Rachel was tormenting her from beyond the grave. Isaac put his hands on her shoulders and leaned down to kiss her temple. Their eyes met in the looking glass. Hulda managed a smile for him. We're going to be fine, she thought. Once we get rid of Rachel once and for all, we're going to be so happy. She followed her husband out the door to the wagon. It was time to go to town. Something in the woods was following them. Shafts of weak sunlight filtered through the clouds to play hide and seek among the branches. Hulda strained her eyes, but she could only catch glimpses of it through the trees. It couldn't be a bear. It was too fast and nimble, keeping up with the sleigh. The hair on her neck prickled. She turned to Isaac to ask if he saw it. The horse suddenly reared up. Isaac pulled hard on the reins. Whoa, whoa, boy, whoa! Luckily, the sleigh didn't overturn. Isaac hopped out to check the harness. What do you shying from, huh? He asked as he petted the horse.
Silly boy, there's nothing on the road.
The horse snorted and rolled its eyes in fright. A pit of dread began to form in Hulda's stomach. She looked around, shivering. But the forest was silent. Whatever was chasing them had disappeared. The horse was skittish the rest of the way into town. Hulda was surprised to see the large crowd gathered on Main Street. What are they doing here? She asked.
To support you, dearie.
Mrs. Mayer took Hulda's hand and guided her through the crowd. Isaac followed. Upon seeing Hulda, the townsfolk fell silent. Hulda could feel their eyes on her. No, Hulda could feel a particular set of eyes on her, like someone was staring through to her soul. The pit of dread that had opened in Hulda's stomach on the road grew larger. Near the back of the crowd, Hulda could see a woman in a black cloak. The hood was pulled up, and the woman's face was in shadow, making it impossible to see whom it was. Hulda was glad when the shifting crowd hid her from the woman's eyes. They reached the blacksmith's. Even more townspeople were packed into the small, muddy yard where the blacksmith shoed horses. An altar made of wood was set up on a makeshift stage in front of the forge. Two blacksmith apprentices stoked the fire, causing flames to leap high. The coals glowed an angry red, the color of a demon's eye. The pit of dread in Hulda's stomach grew even larger. Hulda began to pant. She was scared, and she didn't know why. This was going to rid them of Rachel once and for all. So why the taste of fear on her tongue? Isaac took her hand. He squeezed it reassuringly and led her to the stage where a preacher with a Bible and holy water waited. Hulda stood there, shivering, as the preacher prayed and then ranted about the forces of iniquity. The crowd grew larger and larger. Riled up by the preacher, they all raised their fists, shouting. All but one. The woman in the black cloak stood very still in the middle of the crowd. Her face was no longer in shadow, but a heavy black veil concealed her countenance from view. An icy shiver skittered down Hulda's spine. Who was this woman? Why was she here? A sea of angry red faces seemed to swim before Hulda's eyes, and she felt dizzy. Isaac gripped her hand. The ladies of the church crowded around her, rubbing her back. A murder of crows flew overhead, cawing. Hulda looked up at them, envious, wishing she could sprout wings and simply fly away. Finally, the preacher ceased his sermon. It was time. The crowd swayed as they sang, the fervor clear in their faces. The woman had moved closer. She was nearer to the front of the crowd. No one else seemed to notice her. Only Hulda. The pit of dread in Hulda's stomach threatened to swallow her whole. The preacher held up a platter, unwrapping the cloth that covered it. Hulda whimpered upon seeing the contents. Rachel's organs. A withered reddish-brown heart, two shriveled gray lungs, and a mushy black blob. She didn't even know what that was. Praying, the preacher set the platter on the altar. A great cheer rose up from the crowd as the blacksmith pushed the altar into the forge. Instantly, the whole thing was ablaze, flames burning red-orange. It smelled like death, like fetid meat roasting on a spit. The smoke from Rachel's organs reached up into the sky, thick, oily black smoke. Hulda looked around at the cheering crowd, but curiously, the woman in black was gone. Something was taking shape in the drifting smoke. Hulda blinked her stinging eyes. It was a woman. Rachel. The ladies of the church pressed in closer around Hulda, herding her towards the smoke. Hulda tried to push her way free. Mrs. Mayer grabbed Hulda's arm. "Don't be scared, dearie." Lucy took her other arm. "You have to breathe the smoke in to break the vampire's spell." The ghost of Rachel in the smoke was becoming clearer now. Hulda could see her eyes and the malevolent curve of her smile. Hulda struggled, but the ladies grasped her firmly. Couldn't anyone else see Rachel? Hulda began to fight in earnest, squirming and shoving, but the women held her fast, singing a hymn louder and louder, drowning out her wheezy yells. The smoke ghost drifted closer and closer, enveloping the women. "They say it's for your own good. They say she struggles because the demon's claws are deep." They squeeze Hulda as the air leaves her lungs. A sharp pain shot through Hulda's chest, and everything went black. "Shh, drink it down, my dear." Reflexively, Hulda opened her mouth to accept the cup at her lips, and then gagged. The warm liquid was smoky, gritty, full of ash, mixed with something minty. Hulda opened her eyes. She was sitting in the sleigh, wrapped tightly in a blanket. Mrs. Mayer kept the cup against Hulda's mouth and massaged her neck, so she was forced to drink. Hulda choked and cried, some of the ash tonic spilling on her dress, but most went down her throat. When the cup was empty, Mrs. Mayer kissed Hulda's cheek. She told Isaac that she would come over tomorrow to check on Hulda and that she'd bring soup. The ordeal was over. Hulda and Isaac could go home. The sun was setting, outlining the gray clouds with an odd orange color. It seemed to take forever to get home. Hulda huddled in her blanket, trembling, staring at the road ahead. Isaac kept sneaking glances at her, but she ignored him. When they reached the house, Isaac insisted on carrying Hulda inside. He gently bathed her cheeks with a cool, wet rag, removing the ash and tear stains. He helped her out of her dress and slid a nightgown over her head. Then Isaac tucked Hulda into bed. He knelt beside her and took Hulda's hands in his. "I have to go take care of the horse, but I'll return soon." Hulda nodded, not trusting her voice. Isaac caressed her cheek. "Rachel was my first love, and she will always have a piece of my heart. But I love you, Hulda." He softly kissed her and got to his feet. Hulda waited until Isaac was out of the house. Then she got out of bed. She lit a candle and crossed the room to stare at herself in the mirror. Disbelieving, she felt her face, pinched her cheek, opened her mouth wide. Was this real? She didn't know how this happened, but she was here. Those foolish townsfolk with their silly folklore. Burning organs as a sacrifice to destroy a vampire? Sacrifices attracted spirits. It didn't exorcise them. And inhaling the smoke only invited them in. Rachel stared at Hulda's face in the mirror. It was a pity she had to come back in Hulda's weak body. But she was back, and Isaac, was going to pay.
Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. Now, the story continues.
According to folklore, one of the ways to break the bond between vampire and victim was to kill the vampire by burning their vital organs. This solution worked best if the victim was able to inhale the smoke from the burning organs or drink a potion made with ashes from the burned organs afterwards. If possible, the burning of a vampire's organs was done in the forge or over the anvil of a blacksmith. Throughout history, blacksmiths have been said to have magical abilities. They have power over metal and bend it to their will. Accounts of the incident claim that in February of 1793, Rachel Burton was disinterred. Her heart, liver, and lungs were taken from her corpse and burned on an altar in a blacksmith's forge as a sacrifice to the demon vampire in hope that Rachel would leave Hulda alone. A large crowd, allegedly somewhere between 500 to 1,000 people, turned out to see the burning of Rachel's organs. Sadly, Hulda Burton passed away on September 6th, 1793. She'd been married to Isaac for a little over 2 years. Hulda's cause of death? Consumption. Or was it? Perhaps Hulda could no longer withstand the scourge of Rachel. Maybe Hulda simply let go, hoping to be freed from Rachel's torment, leaving Rachel in search of new victims. We end with one last tale involving the ghost of the Bennington County Courthouse. When the courthouse was being built for show, the town relocated many of the headstones that decorated the graves to a field about a half mile down the road. Eventually, that field grew into the Delwood Cemetery. During renovations made to the courthouse in 1995, some remains were unearthed, forgotten, neglected, disdained. Is it any wonder that some of the dead do not rest peacefully? I drift closer, eyeing my prey. He's a tall man, chubby, a former athlete perhaps, with middle age spread. Smug, a bully. Even in court he was rude. I've been watching him for days. He turns on the faucet to wash his hands, looks at himself in the bathroom mirror. Is there an odd ripple in the glass? He senses something behind him. He turns to see. And that's when I strike. Cruel fate has made this my prison, the courthouse. Maybe because it was here that they stole my heart from me. Hulda, that silly cow. She had always wanted Isaac. I saw her covetous little side glances at him. But he chose me. When I died, she secretly rejoiced. Then, with fake sympathy, she lured him in. Isaac, being nothing but a man, was caught in her trap. But Hulda was always second best. She lived in my house, slept in my bed, long before Isaac whispered in her ear. He whispered in mine. When she got sick, Hulda saw her chance to desecrate my body, dishonor my memory. But when they dared to burn my heart, it roused me from my slumber and returned me to the world of the living. For 6 months until the consumption took her, I possessed Hulda and tormented both of them. Isaac for being a faithless milksop, and Hulda, a jealous bitch. She died, still consumed with thoughts of me. But Hulda had her revenge in the end. When she died, I found myself bound to the graveyard, where they had so cruelly mutilated my corpse. I am incomplete, missing my heart. And without it, I can't return to my eternal rest. Cursed to wander among the headstones, watch the living world pass me by. Everyone I ever knew or loved has long since died. Isaac, that spineless coward, had a long life. He married twice more and had many children, and simply died of old age. Why did fate see fit to damn me? Then they built the courthouse over the old cemetery. My life, or death, however you wish to call it, became interesting. I drifted through the courthouse, listening to the cases, hearing the problems and grievances of the living. I came to realize how awful the living are, how faithless, spiteful, and wretched humans are. Even the judges, rarely fair, often petty, and some corrupt. I began to mete out my own justice. Missing paperwork. Mysterious gusts of wind spilling ink. Court recessed because it's suddenly, impossibly cold in the courtroom. I punished those I deemed evil, causing injury, or killing them as I saw fit. Bricks mysteriously falling to crush skulls. People slipping down the stairs and breaking legs, tripping on something that isn't there. I hover over my latest victim as he lies on the bathroom floor. He lied in court, bullying his ex-wife and seeking to reduce child support. But I heard him on his cell phone, bragging about offshore accounts. I materialize. First my bones, and then my flesh. He sobs in fear, even though he just used the bathroom. A damp spot spreads across the crotch of his pants. I plunge an icy hand into his chest and wrap my fingers around his heart. He gasps, clutches his chest. I savor the look in his eyes, the rush of terror coursing through his body. My face will be the last thing he sees. When he doesn't return to court, they'll look for him and find him sprawled on the bathroom floor. They'll call 911 and attempt CPR, but it'll be too late. They'll shake their heads and mutter, "That was tragic. He wasn't that old. Blah, blah, blah." But his children will be provided for. A whisper in his ex-wife's ear will cause her lawyer to comb through the dead man's finances for hidden accounts. The light is fading from his eyes. He moves his mouth, trying to speak. But then he goes still. I absorb the last of his life force with relish. My name was once Rachel, but you may call me Vengeance. Does the ghost of Rachel Burton still haunt the Bennington courthouse, searching for her missing heart? Just in case, if you visit the courthouse, you should be on your best behavior, or you might find yourself judged and forced to pay the ultimate price. Thanks for listening to Haunted Places. Don't forget to subscribe to Haunted Places on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, or any other podcast directory. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review or tell us what you think on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram as @Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. It seems simple, but it really helps our show. A new episode comes out every other Thursday. We'll see you next time. Haunted Places was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler, additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Haunted Places is written by Candace Rogers. I'm Greg Polson.